Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now, Warren Lehrer and Dennis Bernstein, whose third book together has just been published. They've been called the Rodgers and Hart of visual poetry by Bob Holman, founder of the Bowery Poetry Club, and the Lennon and McCartney of Viz Lit by Stephen Heller, longtime art director of the New York Times Book Review. Some of you may know Dennis Bernstein from his public radio work. He hosts the program Flashpoints on KPFA Pacifica Radio in San Francisco and syndicated on about 70 other stations. Alice Walker, who praises the new book on its back cover, calls Dennis a hero to her for his unflinching reporting of real news. Warren Lehrer is a writer, designer, multimedia artist, and SUNY Purchase art and design professor. This is his 11th book, with some of the previous ones in the permanent collection at MoMA here in New York, the Tate Gallery in London, the Pompidou Center in Paris, and more. And yes, you do recognize that last name because, yes, I am proud to be his brother. Their new book is called Five Oceans in a Teaspoon. It's poems by Dennis, with visualizations by Warren. Thanks for coming in, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
God, it's good to see you. I think it's nice to be with a pair of Lehrers, but I think the last time I saw you, Brian, is that you were working on an Apple, was it a 2C?
Yes, definitely our technology has advanced since the last time we were in the same room. Yes. There's lots that's personal and lots that's political in this book. Many of the poems are very short. And I thought you might get our listeners acquainted if, Dennis, you could read the very short, very first poem in the book, and then Warren describe what you did with it visually.
Well, I'm going to let Warren read that poem because I'm dyslexic.
Because it refers back to the title of this poem is Dyslexia. And yes, it starts the reader right off. Dyslexia. I answer to many names, but the alphabet confuses me. Every day I drown in 26 sounds, and I've never been able to stay between the lines. And the visual that you're referring to, Brian, is trying to help the reader have the experience of dyslexia. Not that you necessarily want that experience, where not only are words and letters sometimes flopped going backwards like we always think dyslexia is, but also letters are duplicating themselves and turning at 90-degree angles and other angles and extending the interior of the word with other unwanted letters.
And turning into numbers, you know, so that I'm the only one who would hand in a composition that had letters and numbers in the middle because, you know, a 3 turns into an E and
when life gets... When you're in
school. Exactly.
Yeah. So what's it like for you, Dennis, to see a visual representation of the dyslexia that goes on in your brain?
You know, it's really profound for me because this dyslexia almost sort of ruined my life. I was very lucky to be able to survive. My mom had 7 sisters. They were all teachers, and they were working where the school system was failing. I was, here's a prime example of my life in dyslexic land. In the 10th grade, it was the second time I was in the 10th grade, but that same year, I won the New York State all-around gymnastic championship.
Huh.
I also failed everything. So I was in the second time I was in. I never knew, Brian, whether I was going to be being called into the principal's office to be congratulated for my latest success in gymnastics, or, you know, we caught you cutting the last 17 days of school. And I would cut all the time because it was like a horrible experience being there.
And yet you've become a person of letters.
Of crooked letters.
A writer.
Yes.
Journalist.
And you know, I can't, you know, it got to, when I first started writing poetry, It was often the case that I couldn't read, even then I couldn't read my own writing, but the cool thing was oftentimes what I thought I wrote was better than what I wrote.
That's hilarious. Let's do another one right away, very different one, also very short. Then we'll step back and talk about them and the concept of the book. That dyslexia poem, and I'd say get out page 138.
138.
I'm calling these, but you're going to read them. The dyslexia poem was from the personal side of things. This is from a section of the book called Front Lines, and the poem is called War Correspondent.
War Correspondent. Whose death do I report first? Whose ashes get top of the fold? Where do I bury the missing in action?
So this is from the second movement, which really deals with Dennis as a reporter.
And you have eight chapters or movements, as you refer to them.
Because I think of the music connection to the way that this reading moves from beginning to end. But we could say chapters. And it sort of forms a memoir in short visual poems. And that contrast between being a reporter, Dennis, and being a poet?
Well, you know, it's you know a lot about this, Brian. You know, news is important, it's crucial. You know, we need good information to make decisions about our life. But oftentimes it's relatively shallow in the grand scheme of things. So I always think of it's news is the story of the day. And poetry is the story of the eternity. You know, we're still reading Kabir and Rumi from the 12th century and being moved and being directed and educated by it. So it's sort of a different way of delivering the news.
Well said. So how do you two collaborate? Juan, Dennis, do you write with anything visual in mind?
You know, only since I've been working with Warren do I do that. It's an amazing thing to see how Warren's visualizations deepen the meaning and really help me understand more about my own struggle with language. I'm still putting in extra letters and words and still wrestling with that, but seeing how Warren interprets it really helps me to understand my own life better. And I am, I think the first couple of poems of this book that restarted the project, I began to visualize things. And Warren took some of that visualization and worked it.
I was in San Francisco touring with my last book and staying with Dennis, and he was showing me these new poems that he had written. And there was this one drawing sketch for this poem called 10 Smiles. And I translated it right then and there with my laptop, making the smiles out of brackets, so through typography. And then it became this correspondence back and forth, sending Dennis emails where I was reinterpreting his
poems. It was a revelation to see Warren, the way in which Warren could transform, could deepen the meaning I just started doing visuals because I've been working with Warren for so long that it's absolutely inspirational and I can't help myself.
And just as another example, the poem you just read, War Correspondent, whose death do I report first? And the word death is set as a newspaper headline. Whose ashes get top of the fold? And ashes is set as another kind of newspaper headline visually. Where do I bury the missing in action? And bury and missing in action are set as if they were pulled out of a newspaper.
Thanks for daring to describe a visual on the radio.
That's what we do. So, Warren, obviously, we are in the audio medium of radio. So for people unfamiliar with the whole field of visual literature, and if you guys have been described, you know, by Stephen Heller, who's been the art director of the New York Times Book Review, as the Lennon and McCartney of visual literature, you want to describe it a little bit?
Yeah, visual literature is a wide field of writing practice that embraces the visual composition of the words as an integral part of the text, marrying visual form with literary meaning. It's got a long history I could get into, going back to when writing was made up of pictorial symbols, into pattern poetry, illuminated manuscripts, up to the modern era. But I just recently discovered something about my own history with VisLit last week when I was visiting our parents, and they put on the kitchen table this thick binder album with things from my youth, letters that I sent to them from camp, from summer camp, when I was 9 years old and 10 years old, and other writings and report cards. But looking at these things that I had written, where the words spiraled in from the exterior circle into the middle and meandered around the right angles of a page and on the marginalia of textbooks.
So here's something I never knew about you. You did that when you were 9 years old. I'm going to have to ask mom and dad to show me this.
And I didn't realize it either, because
the profound part of this in terms of Warren's career as an artist is that when he got to Queens College and he was really taking off doing this work, working with imagery, mixing these kinds of images.
A visual art major.
His professor told him, you know, you can't mix these letters with words, but obviously that wasn't going to sit well because he's been doing it since he's in camp.
But
novels, so plays, other things.
I was a painting and drawing major, but I was always writing on the side. And at a certain point, the words and the image making became one. And I thought that was my origin story with VisLit. But
it was
last
camp.
Week that I saw, wait a minute, I think this happened beyond prior to college or any of that kind of.
Well, he was off being dyslexic. You were off as a 9-year-old able to tell language from visuals. My guests are Dennis Bernstein and Warren Lehrer, whose new book is Five Oceans in a Teaspoon. Dennis, where'd the title come from? What does it refer to? Five Oceans in a Teaspoon.
I don't know. I actually just like the line. And there's part of the line exists in one of the poems, but it's not even, I've been looking for it lately.
It's
something.
It's in a poem called Before Coffee, and we've had several titles for this, and I plucked that out because it encapsulates this work, which takes a wide swath of not only Dennis's life from childhood to burying his parents and dealing with open heart surgery himself, to all kinds of stuff in between, but also as a journalist, also, you know, capturing, reflecting the lives of others.
And
as
I
well.
Like the image. In,
such as the poem War Correspondent that you read before, you actually have been a war correspondent.
Absolutely. And I like the image because, you know, in the context of today and the actions of the students and all that, about 20, 25 years ago, I was doing an interview, Brian, and an environmentalist told me metaphorically, he says, you know, we have about a spoonful of water left, fresh water left. We're all going to have to share. We all better be careful. So that really stayed with me.
There it is. Five oceans in a teaspoon.
So the five oceans part is the expanse that we cover here, but the teaspoon part is with minimal means, these short poems where there's not one word that shouldn't be there, and also the approach visually is just black and white, typography, and everything has meaning.
Dennis, I know one of the other poems from the book that you wanted to read is called Strong Medicine. You have that ready to go?
Yeah, I do, and thank you for asking, Brian. This is a poem I wrote for my father, my late dad, and I wrote it after I went to visit him at the VA out in Long Island in the middle of a snowstorm, and he didn't have long to live. But when I got in the room, he looked at me, and my mom was sitting there, my brother was sitting there, and he said, you know, I'm sure I hear the ice cream man outside. Maybe you can run and get us my treat, you know? And of course, it was a snowstorm. There was no truck. So this is called Strong Medicine. The night before he died, he craved for ice cream on a stick. He swore he heard the bells outside the truck across the street. Could I sneak out and buy a round for all of us? His treat. There was no truck across the street, no crisp bells crackling, but the canteen in the basement did have two dusty old machines dispensing pops and cones and cups. I filled the slots with coins. At 50 cents a shot, those two machines unleashed more vital pain relief that night than the steady drip of morphine clouding Father's final scene. Ah, the loot, he beamed and drew a shallow breath and then another. I toast to the bitter and the sweet. He tore the wrapper off his treat before he lost his breath completely. I watched him eat. I watched him eat like a kid on the sneak before dinner that night as death took a brief back seat to a chocolate-covered ice cream bar on a stick.
Oh, that's so sad and so sweet. About your father.
About my father. You know, when I walked in the room, I didn't realize how close he was to death. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those moments where, you know, if you just think, if you breathe, you'll cry. So he sees this in me. And he summons me to come over the base. Come closer, come closer. My father, by the way, was a furrier. And he reaches out through all the wires and all the paraphernalia, and he grabs my sweater and he says, nice material, where'd you get it? This is a father to the end.
Nice material, where'd you get it? And if he wasn't your father, you probably would have been protesting his use of fur.
I'm sure.
Knowing you.
And that was many, many, many years
that's
ago.
That's another show. We're just about out of time. Listeners, Warren and Dennis will be at the New York Art Book Fair in Queens that begins this afternoon. Where is that exactly?
At PS1 MoMA on Jackson Avenue in Long Island City.
Okay. They also have a gallery show of some of the Five Oceans in a Teaspoon material at the City Lore Gallery. How do you make pages from a little square book into things that display in a gallery?
You blow them up about twice the size and print them on archival paper and let them float off the wall. About
animated
45 of the poems made into prints. But also there's a reel of 9 of the animations that I've been making, selecting poems and bringing them to life in another way through kinetic typography and time.
Right, and we have put on our page one of the animations of one of these pages.
Oh, nice.
And
thank
I think
you.
The animations are magnificent. And of course, I'm not biased at all.
Me neither.
But you can also see some of these, I guess from now till December at the City Lore Gallery, right?
November 23rd.
November 23rd, just before Thanksgiving. And finally, you'll have a book launch and performance next Friday night, September 27th, including violist Andrew Griffin, who's currently on Broadway as the viola chair in the Temptations musical Ain't Too Proud, playing music that he composed for the animations that go with this book. So,
and Alicia Waller, who's composing some of the poems to be sung that night as well.
So where is that for people who want to go?
That's at the Chelsea Wine Vault, the Chelsea Market event space at 410 West 16th Street. And it's free, but tickets are running out. So recommend you go to fiveoceansinateaspoon.com and go to the events page and make a reservation if you want to go to that. And also, the book is published by Paper Crown Press. Shout out to them. And their table is on the second floor at New York Art Book Fair.
Starting today through Sunday. Dennis, in our last 10 seconds, for people who know you from the radio, are you back on Flashpoints next week?
I'm on Flashpoints. It's already done.
You're on this week. He's on this week.
Yeah. Yes.
Pre-record.
Every day, every weekday for the last 30 years.
Okay. From KPFA, Pacifica in San Francisco,
and
syndicated
Brian.
Around the country, Five Oceans in a Teaspoon, Dennis Bernstein, Warren Lehr. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. And have a good weekend, everybody. Brian Lehr on WNYC.